Good morning.
Good morning.
Wait, give me a sec. I'm going to learn how to use a mic. Let's try that again. That's a great start.
It sounds awesome.
What is now? Let's try it again. Good
morning. Good morning.
Welcome. So I'm going to say God is good. You're going to say all the time. I'm going to say all the time. You're going to say God is good. God is good.
All the time.
All the time.
God is good.
That was decent. Let's try it again. God is good.
All the time.
All the time.
God is good.
Amen. Welcome. My name is Chris Odie, and I'm honored to serve as the pastor of what is known as the Living Stones Prison Congregation. Living Stones is what it sounds like, a prison congregation. I do not have an outside church that I serve. I serve in an incarcerated community. At some of the prisons in Washington State, which is where we are, if you did not know that. And if you didn't know that, I'm amazed you got here. So, I am not the only presenter today. I am very honored to share this space with my colleagues and friends, both Chris Hoke and Alex Sanchez from Underground Ministries, and they are going to introduce themselves as well in a bit. I should have said at the start that all three of us use he, him pronouns, so now you've got that as well. We are in for a real treat this week. We're going to be discussing and experiencing and exploring the sin of mass incarceration in our country, and not just from a hand-waving, ringing, pearl-clutching, what do we do about this sort of way, but actually talking about ways in which we as individuals and communities, and in particular as faith communities, can be a part of actually solving and addressing this problem. Amen?
Amen.
Awesome. All the time. I once had a day at worship where someone who was new to the worship body picked up that call and response, and he just kept doing it throughout worship constantly, which was fine, but at one point we were all like, dude, it's been 90 minutes. So we have a lot of examples. Exactly. Tim Wilbrecht is in the room. Was it you? Oh, there you go. So to start off with, though, we thought that we would take a moment just to play with the question of why. In particular, in this case, why each of us said yes to being here. Why each of us said yes to being at Holden, and in particular, here, this moment, this time, what brought us here. There are a lot of us in the room right now, and so we're not looking for full backstories, we're not looking for, lengthy discourses, but if in like a sentence, you could just say why you were here.
Why this session?
Why this session?
Yeah,
that would be amazingly awesome. And I'm going to, I'm just going to arbitrarily look off to my right here, and you know what, I'll get the ball rolling. For the sense of giving you a little bit of comfort. But there will be some discomfort this week, so we're going to be used to that as well. I am here because I love telling the story of this ministry, and I love challenging people's preconceptions of what it means to be someone who has experienced incarceration, and how we as individuals can learn from those experiences and grow. If you'd be so kind, sir.
Finished a book, Just Mercy, and was very interested in the whole incarceration and maybe those who are on wrongly convicted and people working hard to get them out of that situation, especially those on death row. So just the whole, that whole topic, subject, and how hard this group of people,
thank you for that,
attorneys were working.
Awesome.
I'm particularly interested in this lecture after watching the 13th Amendment on Netflix documentary. So also particularly interested in the disproportion of African-American men in our prison system.
Yep. We'll get into that.
Yeah, similar. We watched that documentary together, and then I also have an interest in like minor crimes. How many people disproportionately are in prison because of marijuana, so
right.
Things like that.
Thank you.
My name's Maddie. I'm a correctional nurse, so with the jail health service in King County Jail. It's a general joke. I work in jail.
We probably know some people in
jail. And then I can't stop going to these things.
Fantastic.
I'm in jail, I can keep going, so here we are.
Thank you.
I got interested first when I had a prisoner on death row, and I still have prisoners on death row. And then I got to know Bob Ekblad and Chris, and yeah.
You brought ringers. That was smart.
Pretty much exactly the same. I met Bob Ekblad back in the early 2000s. Met Chris, read his book.
I'm here because you're here.
My son, everybody.
An honest son, too.
My wife, everybody.
But I like listening to you tell the story of things.
Pastor Chris, I'm conflicted. I'm a first responder. I've dealt with victims. I've seen too many kids dead from gang violence. Those people need to be removed from our society.
And now, we'll talk about some of that.
But I don't think they need to be removed from our society when they're 13. And institutionalize them to becoming career criminals. So I have a conflict. That's why I'm here.
That's fair. And actually, we'll do a quick pause because I'll address that right now. Because it's kind of an elephant in the room. But also, I think I have something that I can share personally that will relate to that and also kind of fits into everything this week. And I was wondering when I get to share this, so thank you for that. If you go up to the kiosk right now, you'll see all of our photos. Everyone who is teaching this week, everyone who's on faculty. And most individuals who are there have these wonderful headshots of themselves and their context and whatnot. And truth be known, I don't have one of those in my context. It's very hard for me to get photographs inside the prison because it's prison. And there's a whole process you have to go through. And so the photo that I chose is a photograph of myself. It's a cropped shot of myself and some gentlemen from one of our gatherings every year that we do with families and friends and such. And when I look at that photo, I see some of the leaders of my worship team. I see men who I respect and love, who I have ministered to and with for the last 4 years. When you look there, you see representatives from my worship body, and you see smiles, and you see that context, and it feels good. But when their victims look at that photo, they see something else. And I don't say that to be awkward or hard, I don't say that to be, you know, whatever, but it's just, it's the truth of the matter that in this work, in this area, we're dealing with a situation in which relationships are multi-layered. And it's very easy to try and go very hard to the left or hard to the right and make things very simplistic and binary and black and white. And that's not reality. And so one of the things that I love about this work is that it does challenge some of those really hard binary experiences of good, bad, of right, wrong, and how this fits together. You know, eventually I'll share with you some other stories that I know that Chris and Alex will as well to kind of feed into that. But it's a true thing. And so I thank you for your honesty. And I also think that this will be a good week for you. And I think we'll all grow from having been able to share this together. So,
back in high school, I watched the 13th documentary, and I graduated in 2020, so I didn't get to finish that class. So, but it's just something I found interesting, and I saw it was being offered. So,
yes.
Oh, I'm Mimi. I'm the program manager here, but I'm an artist. I've been living as an artist for the last 20 years, and. Worked in Seattle, and I was drawn to work with the homeless population, and I became an artist in residence at the homeless camp and lived at the camp for 3 months to see, to experience that. And of course, I came in contact with people who were in and getting out of prison, and I became friends with and people who were marginalized. And recently went on a street retreat in San Francisco, and one of the people on the retreat had spent like 18 years in prison from the age of 17, and he was one of the people that I respected the most. We're still in contact with one another.
Thank you.
A member of my congregation was arrested for embezzling, white crime, you know, white collar crime.
And no, I think that was quite Freudian what you said there.
Yeah. My name's John. And visiting prison, because he was in prison. opened me up to the possibility of learning more. I then read Just Mercy.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I'm here because I feel like there's important work being done in the world that I don't know anything about, and I would like to know about it. And secondarily, I'm kind of in the last few months interested in the concept of intergenerational trauma.
We got the class for you.
Because I feel like if we're not doing trauma work, maybe some of the in addition to the systemic stuff.
And the last few years in particular, I think they've really increased our collective awareness of trauma and its impact, and also, frankly, the trauma that has happened within the prison system in the last couple of years also. I'll get more into that later on, but oh boy. One quick caveat, I'm going to cough from periodically during this week. I had COVID last month, just to prep for you guys, and then also just got myself over a sinus infection. That's why I'm coughing in the antibiotic. So, just so you know, my apologies.
I'm Ron. I'll be serving the village as a musician, along with my brother Steve up there, upstairs. We have a fairly thriving prison ministry in our church, and because of my responsibilities, it's just kind of been over in the corners. I haven't really done much with them. And I've met these three gentlemen since Saturday when we all came up together.
We bonded.
And I've enjoyed your families. I've enjoyed your presence. I want to hear your story.
Thank you.
I worked in a public library for 30 years. I have worked with all sides of underrepresented people, that's who hangs out in public libraries. I worked with homeless for 7 years, and what I really want is the privilege people of Holden to have a better understanding of what the real world is like.
Thank you very much.
I know nothing about this topic, really. I'm just here to try to understand a little bit.
That's a great answer.
Marietta, and I just I know there's a lot to learn from incarcerated and formerly incarcerated people, so I just want to hear what I can learn.
Thank you.
My name is Catherine. I'm seeing the 13th Amendment. I find this person, but I have so much more to learn.
I need to get off my butt and watch that documentary.
My name's Jen, and I've watched and read Just Mercy and really realized that there's so much for me to learn, so I appreciate being here.
Thank you. I'm going to hop to the back left here.
I'm Wayne Hilliard. I've read the books and seen videos too. I'm just here to learn.
Thank you.
Ditto.
Awesome. We're getting efficient now with time. I love it.
I read Just Mercy by accident. Someone recommended a book, and I got the wrong title. And it was, you know, it was fascinating. But I'm here to learn.
Cool.
Well, in my work, I've had a lot to do with previously incarcerated, mostly adolescents, but adults. Were then sent to the mental health system. That's where I met them and heard their stories and saw a lot of recidivism.
Completely off topic, but on the butchering of names, those are really important. A little bit of a side story. My wife had the experience where a book club was going to read Eat, Pray, Love.
Oh, no.
And she picked up Eat, Pray, Love, P-R-E-Y. It was a romance novel about vampires. And everyone in the club wanted to read it afterwards.
I'm a teacher, and I have a lot of students that are having impacted by this issue.
I'm also on the teaching staff this week, and I want to A, support my other colleagues, and B, kind of seeing how everything fits together and how we can draw the embedding on the art that we're creating.
So,
I really believe our world needs to move towards more of a community-oriented, everyone supporting each other and realizing each other's value, and prisons do kind of the opposite of that.
Thank you.
I'm here to learn.
Love it.
I'm an alternative school teacher, so I have many students that have been through the system. I want to keep them out. And I do have 30% homeless and unfortunately gangs, and I lose students every year.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm the Gretchen Harris's mother, so that's number one. And number two, I'm kind of the Michael Moore, Where Do We Invade Next?
Fantastic.
So, I don't know why we don't have that, if we need it.
Thank you.
There's a podcast that I listened to a number of years ago
called Invisibilia, which has an episode called The Personality Myth. And it's colored my view of this sort of thing for a long time. Basically, that we are our situation more than that we are good or bad. And I wanted to hear, I suspect that you talk about that sort of thing, and I just wanted to hear more, educate myself further about it.
Cool, thank you.
I worked with Voices of Hope, to the prison choir in Minnesota.
Oh, okay. I just met another Voices of Hope prison choir person this morning.
I'm just here to be open to everything.
Cool, thank you.
I'm here because I know virtually nothing about incarceration, but I come to Holden to learn new things, so thank you.
Awesome, thank you for that.
I'm also here just to learn.
Great. I'm going to take that as an affirmation of what two of you. That was fantastic. You, sir?
Yeah, same.
Interesting.
Here to learn, and I seem to recall a really horrifying statistic that our country incarcerates, you know, a larger percentage of our population than any other country in the world.
We do. We are the land of the free and incarcerated.
And that really troubles me.
Yep.
So glad you guys are here this week.
In my seminary days in the 80s, I'm from Brazil, and I had an experience during several semesters of visiting penitentiary, part of my training. Then I'm here, and then I became a librarian, and then I started reading all of the awful things that they, you know, the systems now create to people that try to return to the normal society, right? And I have, from that information, I think as a society, we don't want to give people the opportunities, right? And I'm curious to see people like you, what kind of responses are, you know, faith communities are providing to offer, you know, people that return to society opportunities to engage in a productive way.
Thank you.
I'm interested in post-prison life, and working out and facilitating that.
Awesome. Jennifer, if you'd be willing to.
I'm Jennifer. Chris Odie's part of my chosen family, so that's one of the reasons to support him. But also, I had an opportunity to visit Living Stones and see the prison ministry, and I'm interested in learning more and understanding the systemic racism that happens.
Thank you.
I'm Julius Ryan. I gathered from just general news that we have a problem in this area, and I'm here to learn about it.
Thank you much.
I'm Susan. I'm here mostly because I ate dinner with Tristan's family Saturday night, and he invited me here.
And he's addicted like that.
I'm just here to learn.
Awesome. Thank you.
I'm Wanda, and I was very impressed by Brian Stevenson's lecture on the campus of Luther College a few years back, and has been very much attuned to the many multifaceted issues around incarceration, and I'm here to learn more. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you, Wanda.
I'm Susan, and I've known Chris for over 25 years, and I wanted to learn more about your passion.
Thanks.
And I'm Tim, and similar to Susan, I've known you for 25 years. You're kind of part of the extended family.
I'll accept that.
So, quite frankly, though, you like your wife.
I've been banking on that for 20 years. She's why I have friends.
Definitely here to learn more. It's such a holy topic, and I think it's really important to have conversations centered in hope as well. So
cool.
I'm excited to learn more about your work.
I'm here to listen and hear your stories and your experiences, and I've also been emailing y'all for months, so I'm like, well, how should I do it?
Was it worth all the effort I put into getting them here? Thank you, Mark.
Just here to learn.
Okay. Wonderful.
Rachel, and when I was young, I wrestled with drugs, was arrested in community. I watched my black and brown friends go to jail and stay in jail. I watched my white wealthy friends go to rehabilitation camp, get sent away for a while.
Yep.
I've worked with youth who are incarcerated, youth in rehabilitation, youth and sexually offended, and I've also worked with survivors and victims, and now I start my ministry. So I want to know what next steps are.
Thank you.
How do I keep learning more?
Awesome.
Same to be here, Lynn.
Cool.
And it's Juliana. Part of our family conversation we like to have and keep engaging. And in my non-parent life, I am really deeply involved in PTA in Seattle and school to prison pipeline.
Awesome.
As a major.
Do you want to share, kiddo?
Yeah. To learn more about incarceration.
Thank you.
I'm Stacy, and I know that my neighbors are incarcerated, former incarcerated people or people whose families have incarcerated family members. I know that this is part of my world that not everybody who else who is my neighbor knows about it, and I would like to do something about that.
Thanks.
I'm Eric, and I guess I know enough to know that this is such a critical issue for our society and such an indictment of our society, our nation, and I also have a lot of work.
Thank you very much. I think we hit everyone now except for Chris and Alex. Two things. One, God is good.
All the time.
God is good. Shake it up. You still want to listen? A little bit of talking. It's all good. I'm going to defer now to my friends and colleagues. And
did you give your wife?
I did. I started with it, but I figured I should start to break the ice a little bit.
Great. So.
I'm Alex, and I am extremely nervous.
That was good.
Before all the time. So before we started, we were outside talking, praying, and I got emotional. I'm feeling emotions in my resurrected life that I've never felt before, and I don't know how to handle them sometimes. So, before I get to my why, I'm gonna go through my unique journey. As young as I can remember, I've been broken. My father died when I was 2 due to a massive heart attack because of his addiction. So, as young as I can remember, I've felt hatred. And it wasn't until recently I understood where all my hatred came from. I hated a man who was no longer here, and I blamed him. So growing up as a Chicano, Mexican-American, in Skagit Valley, I grew up working in the migrant farms, living amongst migrants coming from Mexico. And so I was always caught in the middle. I wasn't white enough for the white community, and I wasn't Mexican enough for my people coming from Mexico. So I always felt like I didn't have a place. I witnessed a lot of rejection, racism, and so I gravitated towards the neighborhood gang. I didn't want to be a part of that, but that's where I fit in. And if I had to do what I had to do to fit in, I was going to do that. Because I had already been broken down by people who I was trying to look up to, teachers, facilitators, whatnot. My older brother, Renato, was there for me. He was my father figure, but he was also part of the gang. So I was following in his footsteps. So I started committing crimes. I started drug abuse, and I ended up with a 10-year prison sentence. Six of those 10 years was in solitary confinement. My violence didn't stop in prison. I continued acting out, assaults, whatnot, and trying to be something that I thought was good for me. It wasn't until recently that I figured out where all my hatred had come from, and that was me missing a father figure. And so hating that man and then looking up to my brother, who was, he's a big guy, tattooed all over. And so I was sitting in solitary confinement, and I had been in connection with Chris Hoke here. I met Chris 17 years ago in Skagit County Jail. he came in with his guitar, and I had trust issues, but for some reason, I trusted this guy. I'm going to trust him. I'm going to open up to him. Even through my brokenness and my rejection towards him, he never gave up on me. He always seen something in me. So about 6 months before my release, I did some soul searching, and I no longer felt what I was doing was right in my heart. And so I was like, all right, I need to figure out what I'm going to do when I get out, or I'm not going to make it. A lot of my childhood friends are either passed away or they're doing life here in the prisons in Washington. And so not only was I looking towards my release, I needed to get released from three things. Release from prison, release from the gangs, and release from my addiction. So I started looking at those three things, got released, and I started slowly walking the path towards living my life. I had never lived my life. I spent all my 20s in prison. So upon my release, I got my driver's license, first time. Mm-hmm. I got a job, first time. I got enrolled in the community college. I am now four classes away from getting my associate's in human services. So with all that said, to me, my why I do this starts with my self-reflection, admitting that I was broken, admitting that I had trauma, admitting that I was wrong, and admitting that I can make a change. And so when I say change and I change my life, I didn't really change my life. Why would I change if I always had a good heart? Why would I change that? So I substituted change with healing. So I started looking at it that way. Why don't I try healing? Because people always told me, you need to change. You need to change. And I would reject that. Why would I change myself? I'm a good person. I just have this mask up. I have this wall up, and I'm hurt. Somebody see me. Nobody was giving me a chance or trying to see me. They're just like, oh, there's this gangbanger. There's this broken kid. There's this little Mexican kid or whatever. Chris taught me what it was to be seen. He seen me for who I really was. And so, thank you, I love you. Chris is now my friend, my brother, my pastor. We used to call him the gang pastor before he was a pastor. And he's also my supervisor, because now I'm on staff with Underground Ministries. I'm a reentry navigator, and now I'm that lighthouse that shines a light on others and helps them see themselves so they can start a chain reaction and help others see themselves. I work with people coming home from prison, the gang affected in the community, the adults, the youth. My why is because everybody has a heart and everybody deserves to be seen. And if I could just help change one life and help them heal, it's going to make that much of a difference. I'm going to be honest right now. When I first got here, I didn't feel like I fit in. But day three, day four, I feel the love. And all these emotions are coming to me. I'm going to accept them. I'm going to accept them. I got asked last week, I was in a different training, if you could change one thing today to help you help others in a different way, what would it be? And I let everybody go first, and I sat there and I thought about it, and it came to me. I would forgive the man in the mirror and start accepting more. So I'll speak more throughout the week. That's just a little bit of my journey, my unique journey, and my why. And I'm here to help heal. I'm here to help change. And to me, being able to break myself down and be brutally honest with myself every day is part of that journey. So, thank you.
Good morning. Good morning. It's pretty easy to fall in love with guys like Alex, huh? And essentially, that's my why. I started going into a county jail 17 years ago. Back up from there, why did I start going to county jail? I grew up over-churched. Would anyone relate to that? Over-churched? Lots of church. The good thing about hearing about being over church as you hear, at least, even if there's a lot of culture and politics and interpretation slathered onto whatever your over church upbringing is. If you're over church, at least you hear the primary text, you hear the gospel stories a lot, and they kind of get into your blood. Like Don Quixote, like reading so many knights errant stories, starts to see, you know, dragons and maidens in distress everywhere. You hear, for me, when I heard the gospel stories over and over and over again, I want to be like, all right, so when are we going to raise the dead?
Yeah.
When are we going to go on this badass adventure from village to village, forsaking all property? I mean, I think I understood early on this was like anti-capitalist radical movement of acceptance that just seemed way more fun than the very safe Republican suburb I grew up in. It was lovely. The lawns were lovely. There were sparkling swimming pools. Their AP classes were very nice. But I heard this story. Like there's this song coming from the pulpit every Sunday. I said, so when do we begin? I was coming from a very evangelical setting. So they always ask people, always give people an opportunity to say yes to following Jesus. I raised my hand over and over and over. Is anyone else here raise their hand over and over and over to follow Jesus at some point in their life? I did. Because everything in me was just saying, hell yeah, when do we get started? I felt like everything was like a student orientation. 20 years of it. A lot of songs, a lot of ideas, a lot of sermons, a lot of games, a lot of Nerf for the games for high school. And so eventually I found my way, long story short, to a county jail where someone was doing theology in a jail. And I thought, great, that's where I think the Bible is written among the outcasts in an empire. And I wanted to go to seminary, but I thought I've already kind of doing the student game too well. I'm kind of bored with that. I want to go to a jail. So I met a guy in Bob Ekblad who invited me to the Skagit County Jail in far northwest Washington State. And it was there. I thought, like most college students, I'll do a year or two here, get an experience. But it was in this county jail that I met guys like Alex. And in a circle of chairs like this, with guys wearing red scrubs and orange slippers, the reflection on the text was electric. Guys, and me, especially the gang members, the guys with ink on their faces and their hands and very colorful language, which pleased me a whole lot. Helped me relax because being like a straight A, 8A worship leader or youth group kid, you learn how to hide your shit. You learn how to hide your stuff. Like you try so hard to be good, and I was doing good at being good, but I'm still an angry white male with pseudo-domestic violence going on at home and confused about a lot of things, and I don't know how to where to hide all those things. And I was around all these guys that were fine cussing. They were fine naming things in the Bible that would start arguments after coming home from Berkeley to my dinner table at Thanksgiving, political things. These guys were just naming it right there in the Bible studies. And they saw that Jesus was recruiting people a lot like a gang member. And so gang members started to teach me about discipleship. I mean, they were into, you know, Sureño, Norteño, we can go into all the history of what formed the different factions of organized violence and self-defense along the streets of America's disenfranchised. But they at least believed in action. They believed if you're going to say something, you got to be about it. And so they saw that Jesus was organizing people to be about something. Lo and behold, they liked it. And they started asking me after Bible studies to come do one-on-ones for pastor visits. Whoa, 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 whoa. I'm not a pastor. I'm like, yeah, man, we've never had a pastor. You're our pastor, dog. And so in a way, I kind of started giving into it, no longer doing this, and started just being like, as strong enough to lawyer meetings, being like, I'm their pastor, they invited me. So I kind of got ordained by folks with felony records and gun charges. And so it was part of why I'm here is that the men that I met at the tombs in America called me deeper into following Jesus more than any church I attended, and I attended a lot. And so what I'm excited to share a little bit now is a little bit of an introduction to how we can look at the realities of mass incarceration through the lens of some of the basic core moments of our faith. And so here's my intro pitch. We might take like a 4 or 5 minute stretch break. Is this, when I went into a county jail, I had what Brian Stevenson calls the power of proximity. He says that at the first point for movement building in all of his talks, the power of proximity. When you get close, I mean, Brian's stories, he thought he was just going to do 1 or 2 years doing death penalty work, but he sat for 3 hours because the guards forgot him for 3 hours with this one guy. He forgot he was in prison. He made a friend. And then when he saw that person dragged off, hollering and screaming, that was a change moment for him. in the gospel stories, when people get close to the tombs that they don't want to be around, Jesus says, did I not tell you, if you hang in there, if you do what I say, you'll see the glory of God. And like this little story here, this isn't just like the change of Alex, this is the change of me as well. This, the more and more I got closer, I started to see the glory of God. I'd sang so many damn songs about it. I think I started to see it. But many of the folks that I met in county jail were either released out into the streets, and so I'd go find them. They'd give me phone numbers, addresses. They took me into the underside of the Skagit County that I never would have seen on the map, the tulip map. And I saw places of incredible pain. I saw places that were, I saw guys being arrested. They'd call me in the middle of the night and being like, hey, this, you know, it's fucked up really, what's going on right now? The cops, you gotta get here. And just showing up. And as I tried to gently mediate and get in between, it never going well. And so, oh, well, we're not there yet. We're not there. But more often, guys were not released from jail. Jail is the mouth of the beast of mass incarceration. That's a jail. Oftentimes, folks don't know the difference between a jail and a prison. A jail is where you're arrested. There's one in every county. That's like the holding tank. That's the mouth of mass incarceration. And then the courts are the processing system, and then the judge hits flush, and then they're taken down into the human landfill system, prisons. A lot of my friends that I met in the mouth, in jail, got swept off to very distant, large lockdown human landfills across the state that we call prisons. There's minimum security, there's medium security, there's maximum security. Guess where the gang members are going? So my buddies were in the lowest circle of hell, of the landfills, and it was prison letters that helped me understand what their experiences were. About 15 years ago, it was before a New Jim Crow came out. How many people are aware of the work of the New Jim Crow by Michelle Alexander? That kind of kicked off a larger consciousness in America that we call the anti-mass incarceration movement now. So kind of before that, I didn't really have language for it. It was just jail ministry or jail chaplaincy or being a gang pastor. I was experiencing, but I was not reading yet up here, these realities. And so this is a big problem. My friends were off in these prisons, and when they were coming home, where they'd get out, I thought, great, you're finally home. Now we can go fishing together. Now we can go have coffee at the co-op where they make fun of my, you know, hippie grocery store that I go to. And we exchange worlds. When they came home, it was not so easy. When they came home, I saw there were so many barriers, invisible barriers that I didn't see, that keep the recidivism rate. Recidivism means the rate at which people return back into the justice system. And just so you know, I will probably not be using the word justice system for a week we'll hear. Criminal punishment system is a better term, I think. Debate, justice is a word that should be earned. But the criminal punishment system, so the recidivism is so high, and I started to learn as I walked with folks, like, hey, you're home, why can't we hang out? Where are you? Why? How quickly they would disappear? I thought it was just addiction. And we're going to go into later on this week how many barriers to reentry there are, starting with housing, employment, just getting a driver's license is one of the biggest ones, how many barriers there are, and so that people were still stuck in a kind of civic underground, a netherworld. So going back to, even though we're in prison, saying, I'll never go back to those relationships, I'll never go back to the gangs, I'll never go back to those drugs, but they're kind of hitting these walls and stuck in a kind of underground network, and of course they're going to go back to survive. That boyfriend they'd never go back to, the girlfriend they'd never go back to, the gangs touch that drug they said they'd never go back to. And so I started understanding more the larger beast that I'm dealing with. And so what we're going to be looking at together this week is the problem of mass incarceration. We could watch a lot of documentaries. I recommend that you watch all of them. 13th is a great one. Just Mercy is a wonderful story that Brian Stevenson shares. We're just going to show a few stats like this to help us denormalize prisons. This is not something like, well, we've always had prisons. We've always had sin. We've always had crime. This is different. And how many of you were here for our last session earlier this morning with Dan Castillo? And kind of like looking at white colonial extractive capitalism. So this is just the next step of that. That there's a, look at the time here. So it's not normal across the globe right now. We have a real problem with locking human beings up in our society in America. But even when it exploded, it's very recent. And so what happened around a decade before 1971? What happened in the years before that? Okay, yeah.
Civil rights.
So this is what Michelle Alexander argues very, very clearly, I think very convincingly, is that as soon as one version, from slavery to Jim Crow, and as soon as Jim Crow, right away laws were moved around to be like, okay, if we can't control a form of the population in this way, let's use the 13th Amendment, which is actually, we can't enslave people unless they, commit a crime, right? And so if we can just like proliferate the amount of laws that people can break, that can make them a felon or we can incarcerate them, now we're on to something. And that so many of those cities that where small farms are dying up across the land, those are the cities that are begging to build new prisons. Why?
Money.
Jobs.
Support farm.
Jobs.
Make money.
Yeah. It's the new harvest. It's the new industry. Right. And so what we're going to be wanting to look at is how what the Christian story, the white Jesus here is kind of a little tongue-in-cheek. Okay? Yeah. I'm not preaching the gospel of super white Jesus. But this is a guy that did like art for Rolling Stone. This isn't even a Christian series. But just looking at, in context today, what a Christian response might look like. It's so easy to look at John 8 where Jesus is interrupting the stoning of the woman who's caught in adultery. But what would that look like today? It looks really difficult. What is it to interrupt this system these days? What is it, if we have a faith that proclaims friendship, that Jesus is accused of being the friend of sinners, and that this system is all about throwing away people who have committed crimes, shouldn't we be a faith tradition that is on the forefront of dismantling this system, undoing it, not just protesting against it, but through our way of doing communion practice locally in relationships in our neighborhoods? And that's what we're going to work on this week, is how we can interrupt this if this is the story that we sing and liturgize and proclaim week after week. Want to take a break? Take 2 or 3 minutes? No?
Yeah.
Don't leave. Don't take long. Go to the restroom if you need it. Let's take about 3 or 4 minutes. Stretch your bones. And we're going to get into some early church icons. I was at a concert in Seattle last week, and the musician kept saying, "Man, y'all in Seattle, so well behaved." And I realized that the third time he said that, he was frustrated with us. He was just like, "You guys are just so dead." I'm not saying that about you. So, how many folks grew up in a version of the church or outside the church where you saw images like this one here? Okay, not many. I hadn't seen this till I was in St. Petersburg, marrying my college buddy that wants nothing to do with the church, but he likes Dostoevsky, and then he met someone in Russia when he went there, and we were in the Russian Museum, and I saw this, and I thought, damn, that's awesome. It's like Jesus is, the resurrected Christ is breaking open a whole underworld, because I've been using that language for a while, about the kind of underground in our realm, and there's all these folks that are in kind of chains down in the darkness down there. And I started learning that this was my entry into Eastern Orthodoxy, into kind of 2,000 years of the Christian faith outside of Europe, kind of like Northern white European Protestantism or the Roman Catholic Church, that there's this whole other tradition out there. And I was on my way out of the Christian faith. I was doing a lot of the kind of post-church, emergent church, but I always felt like we're just all doing creative, surgical Frankensteins of different passages to try to put together a faith that doesn't make us vomit. And I was on my way out.
Doesn't make us
vomit. And that what I realized, what I've been vomiting on, was a version of the faith where essentially God is the warden, if we're going to use kind of like a captivity metaphor, where God is the warden, the almighty, the sovereign, the absolute control freak of the universe. And that a God that needed everyone to bow and kneel and obey. And if we didn't, then there was eternal punishment and captivity. Torture, conscious torture, depends on which version of the warden worshiping religion you're raising. There's different degrees of consciousness of the torment. And I learned that this was a God that loved control and that had a total disgust for humanity because needed to turn away from us, from how sinful and wretched we were, and that delighted in punishment. And that justice was defined as punishment. Does this sound familiar to anybody?
Yeah.
All right. I won't drop too many ecclesial terms that will out me or create enemies. But this is the story that I heard growing up. So I think I was raised in incarceration spirituality. In America, I don't think this is an accident theologically. This is the country that has that kind of incarceration rates, has a very clear and distinct spiritual, cosmic worldview about a God that needs control, that needs confinement, eternal confinement, and pain and torture and suffering, and it desensitizes even children, like me, maybe like some of you all here, to normalize in this universe, people will suffer. And that's just reality, and God's okay with it. And the only way out is to comply, right? To follow the regime. And so this story was different. This was a God who was not the warden controlling and pouring out torture that should be aimed at all of us on one's own child, domestic violence, writ large. But this was a God who was enacting a prison break. So these are very different religions. And so for me, I don't feel like it was a slight theological shift. I felt like I found a different religion. We just used the same text. I went from a religion that was about worshiping a warden to worshiping the prison break leader. Do you see how different those are? They're almost antitheses of people. They're antithetical deities. So I felt like, yeah, if there is not just, I like Jesus, but if Jesus is the image, the full embodiment of a God who is a cosmic prison break leader, then I'm down with this. And I started to realize that wasn't just a post-church, bitter evangelical read on that entire Orthodox Church had been saying this, and they had called Reformed theology and Calvinism like a high heresy. I thought, amen. But I didn't say that in one. And then I started seeing these all over the place. This is the icon of the resurrection. And in the West, there's all different very creative European paintings of Jesus rising alone out of the tombs. Sometimes it's with his foot like this, in a big kind of like European flag that curiously looks like the England flag. Coming out of the tombs, that's like this lone Sunday morning literal.
Captain Morgan.
Right. But the Eastern Church, it's a much more cosmic vision here. It's not literal. Let's just look at this for a minute. 1, 2, 3. So you see a theme, right? Styles change.
Out of prison.
What's that?
He's pulling people out of prison.
Okay.
But I feel like that X thing.
What's the X thing?
They look like
is he just really down on French doors?
Well, they look like the coffin lids.
Okay, they could be coffin lids.
Yeah, I watch a lot of Buffy. They look like coffin lids.
Okay. Alex, what did you think the first time you saw this?
I was thinking about lunch. I didn't know. I thought it was. I was like, it can't be a cross. It's an X. What's the X for? I didn't know something goes off.
Okay.
I have an idea what it is now.
In the Eastern Church, there's the below bar that changes, which goes downward. And one goes to the prisoner or the executed on Jesus' right, and one goes on the left. And one was to, this one's going to heaven, this one's going to hell. And is that being inverted to make both ways possible?
I haven't heard that Eastern Church. But what I learned from the Eastern Church here is something that with all my overchurch upbringing, I've never heard this phrase. The gates of Hades. Those are the gates of Hades. What the hell are the gates of Hades? What's Hades? Hell?
The underworld.
The realm of the dead.
The realm of the dead in which language?
Greek.
Greek, right. The realm of the dead. Is the realm of the dead a realm of punishment?
No.
It doesn't have to be.
It's just inevitable.
It's the realm of the dead. And so Jesus has this passage that I swear I've never heard preached on once. Because in the evangelical tradition I was raised in, there's not a lectionary. So you can, it depends on what pastor is doing a cool series on something. Your series can jump around. That was accused me of picking and choosing texts. So the gates of Hades. this is where it comes from. Not just, someone read this?
This is Simon Peter said, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." And Jesus replied, "Blessed are you, Simon Bar-Jonah, for flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father who is in heaven. And I tell you, on this rock I will build my church, ecclesia, and the gates of Hades shall not prevail against it."
This is the founding of the church. This is it. Who was, for God so loved the world that... blah, 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 blah. But what passage is that?
John 3:16.
Right, so we can, there's some chapter and verse that we know. This is a good one to remember. Matthew 16:18. Matthew 16:18. What is church? Ecclesia. I always put parentheses there. Ecclesia, well, there were always, we've heard of the Assemblies of God tradition. So that's just a different translation of ecclesia instead of church. Assembly, they were political movements that gathered in the public realm, in the public space. What do we call that today? Political gatherings in the public space, in the streets.
Protests.
Right.
Political conventions.
Okay. I like the word movement for a number of reasons. So I'm going to play with the word movement a lot. I'm going to use that interchangeable with church. Because when Jesus says, "On you, Peter," and actually his real name was Simon, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Peter means?
Rock.
So even the beginning of the church starts with Jesus working with someone that has kind of like a tough street name. So, on you rock, I start my mission. And it's not a mission to get to heaven. It doesn't talk about heaven here. It doesn't talk about the direction of the church. Most people would argue is preparation for heaven. That's a really interesting idea. I think Jesus would be confused by it. Jesus said, my movement is aimed this way. The gates of hell can't keep us out, you know. That's the animating excitement of the founding of the movement of the church. The gates of Hades, as if we were, it wasn't just that image I showed of that we worship a prison invading God, but that he's recruiting a prison invading movement, as if there were this divine life that was coming from heaven to earth and from earth into the lowest parts of society and into the hell and the tombs and the realm of the dead itself to bring life to all. That we are not part of a moralizing warden game of who's good and who's bad. And I was raised in that moralizing game, and it makes you a perfect American for mass incarceration. But to get recruited into the God of life that brings life everywhere, and it keeps going down until hell is no more, until all are raised. So this is the hope, at least icons, is that all creation, it goes all the way back to Adam and Eve, is that the entire prison is emptied. Do you get that? That the entire prison is emptied, that the entire realm of the dead is subsumed in this flood of life, into the bowels of the earth, into the bowels of the darkness, into whatever justifications we have of who's good or who's bad or who's sinners, they get swept into a resurrection movement.
It seems like communal salvation, right? Communal resurrection. It's not just Jesus. It's all of us or none of us.
It's a universal resurrection. And if anyone's like, well, we're talking universalism, well, there's a really nice book I brought here called Resurrecting Easter. And someone goes throughout the ancient Near East and finding resurrection icons everywhere and looks at the East has a very different cosmic, exciting vision of what the implications of resurrection are, and that these icons were everywhere for a long time before the West won the story of what Christianity will be for a few hundred years.
Where did the incarceration God idea start that this is an objection to?
Colonialism?
No.
A long time ago.
Ambrose. They needed to come up with a new answer, because God wasn't rational enough when Islam came in. He had a real clear idea about things, and God was not a straight shooter. And our God wasn't a straight shooter. He had tricked the devil. He had baited a hook with Jesus' body to catch Leviathan and things like this. We had an iconography like this. But Ambrose came up with an answer and came up with the penal substitution theory on the
tongue. A lot of it was forged in the substitutionary wars. A lot of it was forged, I'm going to say like 1 minute on this and move forward, but I think these are questions I want us to be mulling about and debating and meditating over our toast and peanut butter and jam this week.
I think it happened in Constantine in the 300s.
You could say all the way back.
With the Roman Empire.
312, as soon as Christianity just got happily endorsed by the empire, then they could shape the religion from there on out, for sure.
Yeah, no, I've said in many a congregation, I've made the observation that probably one of the best things that ever happened to Christianity was, you know, Constantine, in the sense of becoming safe. And at the same time, one of the worst things that ever happened to Christianity was that blending of power and theology, and that stepping back from that idea of this being a movement, which is, it should be a given that we understand that this is a movement, not a static expression.
Right. And I love going after those questions. And if I get my heart too broken in this work and I go back for a PhD, I will be going after that question. I'll be trying to trace a line from John Calvin to slavery to mass incarceration. If anyone wants to help me out with that project. In summary, Jesus' movement has a direction. It's not up. It's through the gates of Hades, the barriers, the prison-like walls. This is not a prison riff on Christianity. This is the shape right there in Jesus' chosen language at the founding of the Jesus movement. And so if we have a faith that explicitly uses prison door language and liberating language at the center of our faith, and we have a problem, a crisis of over 2 million people incarcerated in our country, we got to find a way to put this faith into dynamite action right now to start undoing and emptying the Hades system, the mass tombs. I call mass incarceration mass tombs, kind of interchangeable now. And I want to introduce that language, as Chris is already doing today, as he's talking about his work going into prisons as a practice of us entering the tombs with Christ. And that should be a bread and butter mission for youth groups and seminaries, that we all enter the tombs and learn how to approach the tombs if our Easter story is worth a damn in America. That's kind of where we're going this week. So that icon, if you find one online or you want to print one out or put it in your home, it's really nice corrective to some Western stories, that this is the movement. Jesus is both descending, see the white fluttering cape, as well as this is the resurrection. So it's the both. It's the up and down through the gates of Hades. Do we mean the down or the up? Both. That we become so conversant in descent and resurrection, descent and resurrection. This is our movement. Oh, and this is even a bit of a challenge to some of our more progressive, wings of the church, that we really pride ourselves on being welcoming, that we have open doors. All are welcome here, and we put out any flag we can find that really promotes, we're not going to reject you here. You're welcome to come in. And while that's wonderful, it still misses the metaphor that the gates we're talking about are ours. We have no gates. We are not just opening our gates. We don't have no gates. We are something more radical than that. We are invading scarier gates. So we're not just creating open and multicolor and lovely welcoming gates into our places of worship. We need to be aimed at scarier and heavier barriers of the empire's gates for our brothers and sisters in our neighborhoods who are trapped. And so we need to switch up what gates we're moving in and out of. Does that make sense? So don't hear me as saying let's not be welcoming, but that's not yet, I think, at the kind of gates that Jesus is calling us towards. So we join this descent and resurrection movement that shatters the prison of the underworld. Kind of gave away the answer to that one, huh? Alex, this is just a distant picture that this underworld is kept out of the view of most of us in our community. If you want to come back in, can you share with us a little about what it looks like, what it smells like, what it sounds like, what kind of a unit we're looking at in this photo?
It's an idea.
In my case, I was in and out of solitary confinement. My second time in there, I was in there 24 months. Mine didn't have windows. It had a window, it was glossed out. So I became very pale. You're underfed. If you're STG, security threat group, gang member, you get different privileges than others. Others get TVs, others get radios, you get nothing. You get books, which is a blessing. I love books. Every other day you get to come out for an hour. You don't always get that hour because you're not in charge. They like to, and when I say they, the guards and people working in DLC, they like to show that they're superior. So Sometimes you only get 10 minutes. Sometimes you only get 15 minutes.
Well, when you say out, why don't you describe what that means?
Out, turn around, cuff up, and then they open the door, get on your knees. I'm going to cuff your ankles. I don't know why. I'm just one, and it's two of them. But and so even when you go to shower, you get transported in chains, even if it's from here to that chair. You get transported in chains, and out is another box within that box where there's a phone. Half the time it doesn't work. Technical difficulties. And so, yeah, that's IMU right there. And when I was in Walla Walla State Penitentiary, there's a process. When you first go to IMU, you go to IMU North, and if you catch a program is a long stay in solitary confinement, you get shipped to IMU South. So every time I landed in IMU North is also the death row unit. So I've been neighbors with Gary Ridgway, the Green River Killer, and many other people who were just gone. And so I witnessed a lot of people who their mental health deteriorated over time. They would lash out, they would rip their clothes, they would try to kill themselves, they would grab their feces and rub it all over the place. And I think that if I didn't have people by my side who still cared about me, who still sent me letters, who I could call and still have that sanity, it would have been a different story. That's IMU.
So I'm going to talk a lot tomorrow about going into the prisons, and there are a lot of acronyms that get thrown around. And so Alex has made a few references to IMU, which is the Intensive Management Unit, which is the current preferred nomenclature for it. But it's the IMU, it's solitary, it's SEG, it's the whole, it's all of those things. And to put it kind of into perspective with these doors here, like, I don't know what facility this is. I know it's not Shelton, I know it's not Monroe, but if this was Monroe as an example, and I was going to visit someone who was behind this door, this would be the 13th door between this person and outside. And when I say door, I don't mean like that. I mean, I will have stood in front of 12 different doors that someone else controls whether or not I have access to, just going in to see him. But that's the layers that we're talking here. And don't get me wrong, I understand security, I understand protocol and all that, but like, that's a lot of doors. That's a lot of gates. I mean, symbolically and literally, when someone is taken there, one of the things that I've noticed in the facilities I've been in, and my assumption is that it's similar everywhere else, that even to get there is a maze, which I understand, again, from a security point of view, why they do it, but even for me going in as a contractor, it is so disorienting to try and understand where you are in the facility. And I got there with my eyes open, with, you know, all of my senses intact to make it to that space. And so for someone who finds themselves there, it's even more disorienting and dehumanizing when that begins.
I did bring home one thing from the hall, and I brought home anxiety. Started having my first panic attacks about a year before my release. I got used to being by myself, my space. So I have a hard time in big public areas with a lot of people. And sometimes it's mental, but most of the time it's physical. I started feeling like I can't catch a full breath or whatnot, and that's because I got used to that place. I got used to that routine. Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah, these spaces maintain, cultivate, harvest, and perpetuate violence in our communities. So most folks who are coming home from prison are coming home 2 to 3 times as violent as they ever were, whatever they were put up to as a scared teenager with a gun in their hand. They come home trained and militarized, not just by the gangs in prison, but by the staff. Control and punishment. And that gets played out in homes, and then children witness that in the cycle. So these are violence training centers. So this is my very fancy audio-visual integration for trying to put together our early church icons that we had of the descent and the conquering of the gates of Hades, and where we need that mission today, where we need that icon to come to life, where we need communities forged by the hope and the energy of that icon to be today. Essentially, that's where we'd like to go this week. And we're going to tomorrow talk about entering the tombs as in-prison ministry, all different ways. So raise your hands if you know someone who has a prison ministry, some kind of a program or a ministry that they go into prison somewhere near you. Okay. So there's all sorts of ways to go in, and what we want to do is begin to frame that as part of the Paschal mystery. Because when Chris and I got to know each other, we were both kind of talking to similar churches in Northwest Washington, like, oh, you're the Chris of the prison guy? You're the Chris of the prison guy? And there would be temptation to be like in rivalry for different little prison ministries. And we got together, realized not only do we really like each other, but what we're doing was so complementary that he's trying to invite churches to go into prisons with him. And I'm trying to organize churches to become resurrection communities, welcoming people out. So together, we're kind of like trying to embody the Paschal mystery of death and resurrection. Sure, yeah, we can arrange the gates of Hades in the shape of the Paschal mystery, for sure.
He's also got like a foot and a half on me, so like a, you
know. He's a big man.
And then Alex has lived both the descent, both. I mean, we have the privilege of operating Christian ministries and work with nice people, and people open doors for us when we walk in. Alex was brought in through the descent, through chains and through cuffs in the back of very uncomfortable vehicles, and living inside hell holes, and then walking that resurrection journey, learning how to trust.
We have the privilege of both code switching and passing, you know, constantly. Like, I can walk into any congregation and tell this story, and I'm the safe, white pastor guy. You know, it's really easy. Almost disgustingly so in some ways.
So we have a few more minutes. Alex just asked me if we could play a video that we have so you could see more of the faces of some of the folks that we were going to. Does anyone have a burning question? Because we're going to answer some questions throughout the week, but we really want to save the last day as like an omnibus of lots of Q&A and let's get started and let's get signed up for different brainstorm solutions in your context. So tomorrow's descent, next day is resurrection through our One Parish, One Prisoner program, and then the last day is a lot of Q&A and workshopping. But does anyone have a question right now before we might show a video that gives a little more context? All right. Alex, you want to give a short introduction to the video, and then that will be our benediction? I made promo video.
All right, so this video shows the work that we do with men coming home from prison and men struggling with gangs in the community. And so I'm in this video, some of my journey's in this video.
2.4 million people incarcerated. That's what I think of as the mass tombs of our culture. And I think the only way we're gonna empty the tombs of mass incarceration is if we have a whole new mass movement of relationships where people know their names and care for them and know them as friend.
When you hear about someone in prison, you're just like, oh man, this guy's a convicted felon. But fits through a letter or a phone call, you start to get to know someone whose face you have not seen. And if you do it long enough, you're gonna fall in love with that voice, with that story.
Prison's a great way to create a monster. It's also a great way to create a person who's just strong.
When I got released from prison, I had just made one of the biggest decisions in my life, you know, to change myself, who I am, you know? So it was overwhelming, you know, a lot of anxiety, a lot of stress, and I still deal with a lot of it.
I used to feel judged all the time because I was a former gay man, mirror with my tattoos, and they judge a book by a cover right away when they didn't even know me. And when I was underground mystery and meet these other people, they didn't judge me. They wanted to know my story. They wanted to know who I was. They wanted to get to know me.
In Washington State, there's roughly the same amount of churches as there are folks in prison. And when we did that math, we realized there's a reentry community in every town.
Jesus told us to be in relationship with the incarcerated. And if we can be a part of them having a chance at being able to live a life of love and service and joy and hope, how could we as Christians deny that?
You don't have to be some radical gang prisoner reentry expert to do this work. We're working with employers inspired by the folks at Fidalgo Coffee Roasters and our Underground Coffee, which is the flagship inspiration for a whole culture of resurrection employment. Through One Parish, One Prisoner, we're now mobilizing faith communities across Northwest Washington to do exactly what we do, which is relationship.
Being involved with OPOP has made my faith stronger. I've come to realize that God's never going to give up on these guys or quit giving them another chance. And if he's never going to quit giving them another chance, then I can't either.
There are a lot of things that happen in churches that have ulterior motives, where it is, what's in this for us? We're going to reach out to someone in hopes that they're going to come to our church or something like that. And this isn't that. This is, we are going to reach out to someone and be in relationship with someone.
I was at the tail end of 27 years in prison. All of a sudden, I started getting these letters from people I didn't know, but from the community I was going back to. I finally opened the letter up and I was like, pleasantly surprised. There's these people who are happy I'm getting out. It's nice to know that when you walk out, you're walking out not to, crap, here comes another ex-felon, more, great, you're out. Let's go get a cup of coffee and figure out what we can do now. How can we help you succeed?
Underground Mission helped me pay my license, take me to my court, put a lot of positive people around me.
Underground Ministries connected me with a good job. I work nights, I got a bank account, you know? They helped me get my driver's license. First time I've had my driver's license in my life, 31 years old. With their inspiration and their dedication towards me, I started believing in myself and finally felt like it was okay to be myself, who I really am, because I hid it behind a mask for so many years.
We want to share what's working, the models we're developing here in the Pacific Northwest with the rest of the country, where families, congregations, and employers can easily use these models to practice relationship and reentry in every community across America. Your donations, they help this movement grow. You drinking underground coffee opens new conversations in your workplace, in your home, in your church. You and your community signing up to do One Parish, One Prisoner with us is how this movement grows, where communities of faith can be the gate into friendship and resurrection and welcoming our community home from the underground.
Thank you for your time and your heart. Alex will be sharing much more tomorrow, as well as Chris, about Living Stones Ministry, about the descent first, before we stop to speak about resurrection later this week. God bless you and see you at lunch.